Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we spend some time together, as we travel together without going anywhere. So just kick off your shoes. You can't do that on an airplane, or you shouldn't. Take off your hat and raise your right hand. Take off your hat. That's a Three Stooges reference. I won't make one of those again. Bless you. Welcome. Oh, hello, my friend. I'm Hardy White. How are you? I'm so glad to see you. I want you to come on in. This is a very special radio show today because I'm going to take you on my time machine. Now, if you're a regular listener, you're saying, well, I'm pretty sure that you've taken us on the time machine before. I know you've gone to ancient New Jersey, and there was that time that you accidentally turned Don into a house because you had to go see Dorothy Kilgallen. I know, but those were actually recreations. Today, I'm going to take you on the time machine with me. And I won't tell you why until we're in it. Well, that's kind of scary. Oh, everything's scary if you allow it to be. I want you to come on in now. You don't have to sit. You don't have to stand. That's the beauty of radio. What is this place? You won't even ask that because you don't really know where you are. Oh, I'm so glad you're with me. We're going to get it started up. And here we go. Well, Hardy, I was wondering. Wait, don't wonder, because we have gone far into the future and you're already dead. Well, now, what? Oh, hold that thought. Oh, now we're in the distant past and you haven't been born yet. Hardy, what are you doing? I'm still here. I still exist. Oh, kind of, sort of. What are you trying to do to me, Hardy White? Well, I am trying to reset you. You see, you have become tethered to your time, to your place, to your era. And now I am going to rip away those ropes that hold you down like the Hindenburg. It didn't end well for the Hindenburg. It doesn't end well for anybody or anything. So we're going to go a place where there is no end and there is no beginning. In the time machine, we can be any place at once. And you can be no one and everyone at once. You can exist and not exist. What does that even mean? Why are you doing this to me? Well, listen. I want you to just soak in your existence without having to think of anything. See, now all those concerns you had about the time you were in, all those events are long over. Whoop! Nope! They haven't even happened yet. Oh, and now they're long over. So we're going to be in that place together. Well, now you're trying to confuse me. Am I? Yes. Well, in a way I am. I want you to soak in your existence. See, there's some things you can do with water. Now, I'm going to break all the rules of radio because a lot of times those who would present something to you on radio or television or in a book, they have a story to tell. They have something they want you to think, or they want to persuade you or at least show you something and have you feel something. But this is different. I guess the comparison would be, did you ever see one of those water shows where they have the fountains, the timed fountains, and the fountain goes up and it turns into a dragon and the water flies over the crowd and it goes back in and woo! And then there's taking a bath. This is more like taking a bath. We are going to soak in that. There's nothing really entertaining about bath water. It's the soaking that's the good part. It's the losing yourself. You feel like, oh, when I'm in a bath, it feels like I haven't been born yet or I've never been born. Is this a sensory deprivation tank, Hardy? Oh, it's more than that. This show is a logic and linear thought deprivation tank. You're going to have your brain kind of come apart and just float into pieces in all directions. How can that be good for me? Listen. Right now, you are probably feeling the anxiety of futility, the futility of concern. You have all of these things that you're thinking about, self-preservation, the preservation of others, oh, pain, joy, they're all in you. and you've differentiated all of them. We're going to go and mix them all back up again. Why would you want to do that? Because we never do that. We never subject ourselves to that. And I'm going to take you in the time machine where your brain's going to come apart. Oh, there's nothing better than taking something apart to see how it works. I used to take apart things when I was a child. Somebody would give me a radio, and I would take it apart, and I would say, hey, that's what it looks like when it's broken. It didn't really give me any insight to how it worked, and I was not able to put it back together. I did this with watches and clocks. I would take them apart, and I'd say, well, look at the components. And then I would rearrange them so they were a picture or something. It would no longer be a clock. It wouldn't work in the sense that that things are supposed to work, but I wasn't really concerned with telling time to begin with. I wasn't really concerned with hearing any kind of radio program. A dead radio is just as good as a live radio if you have an imagination. Take that old dead radio and just stick it up to your head. Put it up to your ear. I don't hear anything. Oh, you will if you listen carefully. If I do this right, you will never need to hear Hardy White ever again. Who are you anyway, sir? Oh, I'm nobody. Are you a person? Are you a character? Are you a meme? Are you an idea? Are you a ghost? I forgot what we were talking about. Hey, listen, if you do need to sit down, there is sort of a chair right there. You can sit down. You don't need a chair to sit down, do you? And you don't need a book to hear a story. You can hear one of those in your head, and you can stop it when you're bored. You don't have to say, I've got to finish that book. I started it, and now I got to get through it to the other end of it. Why? Oh, my gosh. Listen, do you hear anything? Is that an engine? Where are we in time now? I thought you said we were in the distant past. I don't even know right now. We could be completely outside of time. Did you ever see those science fiction movies? Sometimes that'll happen on Doctor Who. Doctor, are we in the future or the past? Oh, we somehow popped outside of it. Well, that doesn't seem right, because I'm hungry. And that seems like there's going to be... I wasn't earlier. Therefore, has time passed? And you go, oh, it's only passing relative, blah, blah, blah. Well, it doesn't even do that here. It doesn't even pass relative to anything. You look at the clock. Can you see it? No. There isn't even a clock. That's the beauty of this, isn't it? We're just pure sound. I'm pure sound, and you're pure sound, and that's all we need right now. I would love to be able to tell you something definitively. And I've tried. Oh, my gosh, I've tried. I've tried to tell you stories that I think that I know the meaning of. For instance, the other day I was speaking about my great-grandmother. I had a great-grandmother when I was very young, and I remember her very well. I called her Gigi, not because she was an exotic French actress. It just stood for great-grandmother. And by the time you have a lot of that, you run out of names. You know, you got a couple grandmothers, right? You know, and then on top of that, you know, you got to have names for each one of them, and you don't want them to overlap. You go, that one's meemaw, mamaw, grandma, grammy, gram, gram. By the time you get to your great-grandparents, you are completely exhausted, all of the nicknames. And so just great-grandmother. This particular great-grandmother, by the way, when she would send greeting cards to my mother and my grandmother, would sign them grandmother or mother. I always thought that's what she called herself. So I thought that was interesting. I came from one of those families that wasn't big on the nicknames. Yes, what do you call your grandmother? Grandmother? Just makes sense. But she was a towering figure at 4'11 to me as a child because she was the matriarch of the family, clearly the oldest person. And she was in one of those families where her youngest sister was still alive and was old enough to be that person's mother. So it was a big, large family, so that the oldest daughter was, you know, like 20 years older than the, my great aunt and my grandmother, or my great great aunt and my grandmother were the same age. So that's interesting, right? So I knew all those folks, and so I was thinking of them. Now, sometimes when I think of them, I think of them like I did when I was 5 years old. I think of them in an idealistic way. I think of them in a way they probably weren't. I knew only what I saw. And to me, they were more like characters than they were people. I wasn't old enough to know that people had experiences, that they had internal lives, that things had happened to them that I would never know, that they had secret thoughts. This never occurred to me. To me, they were just old folks who showed me kindness. And so I elevated them to the level of gods, practically. Oh, their sweetness. They were love personified to me. And so, as you can see, I set myself up for heartbreak when I finally lost those old folks. But I was thinking particularly of my Aunt Helen. And we took her out to a fancy restaurant for her birthday one time. She was my great-great-aunt. And we were getting back in the car, and it was one of those fancy restaurants that had a valet or a valet or a valet. One of those people that takes your car. A thief? No, they bring it back. But you have to pay them. Kidnapper? I guess. That's accurate. So they were shutting the doors, and I had put my hand on the top of the window of the car door. I was pulling it shut myself. I know that's not where you're supposed to put your hand. And the fella mindlessly came by and was slamming all the doors and slammed the door with my fingers still on the other side where they stayed when the door was shut. So I believe I yelled, excuse me, your son's a very polite child. Excuse me, my fingers. Something like that. And they opened the door and everyone was shocked, especially the gentleman that had closed my hand in, because, see, people frown on mutilating children's hands, and that's understandable. And so immediately he felt terrified. I don't know whether it wasn't just the act of doing it, but I would think, I just cut the hand off of these folks after they tipped me, and I really believe that there's going to be repercussions. But I was less injured than you'd think because it wasn't one of those doors that had the metal on it. It was a new enough car that it was just window. Does that make any sense? So when it didn't sever my fingers, they were just sort of like stuck in there. It didn't feel good. But what I remember most was not the pain of my hand. It was the pain on the face of my Aunt Helen, who had the most horrifying expression I have ever seen on a human being, because she is one of those folks that was, gosh, I don't know how to describe it. Her main concern was that everybody had enough to eat. That was about it. And she didn't have a lot of opinions or anything. I'm not saying this is a good thing. I'm just saying it's a very old-fashioned thing, you understand. And her main goal in life was to love and to nourish and to protect. She was a widow. Her husband had died in World War II, and she had been on her own raising her only child. And his family was all she had. It was her family. She was so shocked, horrified, and saddened that I forgot my own pain. And to this day, it's that I remember. Then I began to think, now why am I even remembering this? What a strange thing. Of all the thoughts in my head, why did this come to me today? Why did this, incident that wasn't really significant, why did I remember it again? And why am I remembering these old people? And when I did remember it, it came back so vividly. Oh, I was there once again. So I think right now I'm going to zip ahead until I am gone as well. to all the people that I have ever loved or will love are gone. Oh, now there's nothing to fear. Oh, I've gone in the past again. They're not even here yet. I have no attachments, just these memories. But are the memories of people that don't exist yet or existed long ago, they can't hurt me. Oh, gosh, it feels good to take off my shoes emotionally. I just need a minute. Do you? I just need an hour sometimes to kick off those shoes of concern, those that anxiety that comes from grasping at something that's so impermanent. Oh, that sandcastle by the shore. Every time there's a wave, my heart breaks. I spent so much time building it. But if I don't build it, I've got nothing to do. I'm not going to sit here at the seashore and not make a sandcastle. I know that it's going to be erased. I know that all the sand will go back to where it came from. And all the sand, by the way, some of it at least, is ground up individuals. Say, oh, people? Well, they're people to that. They're people. So little coral people and little mollusk people, little fish people, it's all them. It's the remains of life. And I'm sitting on it. I'm making castles with it, even after it's long gone. So I'm saying we'll zip ahead into the future, and everybody we know is sand. So we'll just make sandcastles, and there's not even any waves to get rid of them. And the other good thing is we can't see the sandcastle, so we won't get attached to it. We'll just get attached to one another. That's the thing about resetting. It's just you and me. We are unburdened by the expectations of our ancestors. We are unburdened by the expectations of our descendants. We are unburdened by the expectations of our peers, about the time we are in, about all the things that we're supposed to say and think and do and know already. Every time somebody mentions a book I haven't read, or a philosopher I've never heard of, or some idea that's never even crossed my mind, I begin to think maybe I'm less than a person. Maybe I haven't been thinking enough. Maybe I don't fit in. Fit into what? When I'm in the time machine, it doesn't matter. Oh, come with me for a moment and take a soak. Last year, I visited Japan for the first time. And I stayed in an inn, a very old one. It had been in this family for hundreds of years, literally, same family. And so I imagine they were finicky. I felt very bad staying there because I know I was giving them money for it and everything, but I thought, oh, you know, sometimes I'm messy or I think I might hurt something. There's such beauty here. I feel like my very presence interrupts that beauty, and I apologize for that. And I felt guilty until I got into the bath. I got into that bath. It was one of those baths that's like a mikveh. I don't know what that is, Hardy. Well, if you ask your rabbi. So, but anyway, like a deep bath, you know, like a real soak. You can soak down to your neck. You can sit in there like a hot tub. A hot tub that feels spiritual. That's what it is. So I sat in that tub after cleansing myself. See, the bath was not to get clean. Oh, no, that was not the point. The point of the bath was to soak. The point of the bath was to clean my soul, not my body. I cleaned my body over there sitting on a stool with a hose, and I rubbed it good with soap until I was absolutely as clean as I could possibly be. Then I got into the tub to do the real cleaning. And that's what I want you to do with me. I want you to sit here in my time machine. There's a movie called Hot Tub Time Machine. Not anymore, there isn't. Not anymore. That won't happen for tens of thousands of years. Or, we'll zip ahead. Oh, there's no copies of that left. That never even happened. So don't think of that. We are soaking together. I'm soaking in it. You are soaking in it. That's a 1970s advertisement. And those aren't around either. We're just going to let ourselves dissipate a bit. In this tub, you don't even have to stay a body if you don't want to. So I look down, my body's broken. Hardy, my body's broken. It gives me pain. Oh, my body's broken. Not anymore, it isn't. What body? Look down. Where'd it go? See? Ah, start over. We can start over. We can reset. You and I are setting in a tub. No, we're resetting in a tub. We're flying through space.
No, we're not.
Okay. Well, we're doing something together. And all I'm trying to do is give you a vacation. That's what you need. You need a vacation. But you need a vacation from more than you think you do. Because normally think I need a vacation from thinking about my work. You need a vacation from thinking about everything. You need a vacation from thinking. You need a vacation from existing. You need a vacation from being. Oh, the burden of being. The burden of existing. The burden of living. You don't think about it. Well, it's hard. Oh, my gosh. Let's say you were a god. All right? And you say, well, the first thing is, where's my damn croissant? But after that, you'd say, hey, I think I'll do something. Maybe I'll make some world or something. That right? The first thing you do is, I got this Lego set. Maybe I'll animate it and everything will come to life. And I'll put these beings in there. And they'll have a beginning. And here's the catch. They'll have an end. Let's see what they do. We'll have a little timer. How much time do they have? Well, I know, but they won't know. And then they'll have to go about some task. What will it be? Oh, I'm not even going to tell them. I'll just let them decide. Sounds cruel, doesn't it? Well, it's hard, at the very least. I do know that. And I do know that there are moments where I don't necessarily feel that difficulty. So that's what we're shooting for. We're going to go there. We're going to go there together. Oh, it's very exciting. So your time machine, is it larger on the inside? Like Doctor Who's? Is it smaller on the inside, like a lot of these McMansions that you see? Is it, what do you mean by that? Have you ever gone into one of these mansions? You say, that's a mansion. And somebody invites you in for some unknown reason, I guess because you're making a delivery or something. And you walk in, and then you look up and you say, your foyer, or foyer. Valet, foyer. He is impossibly tall. Look at that up there. My goodness. That's like three stories of what? I don't know. What you do you have like, are you wearing some large hat? Do you have a Carmen Miranda hat that rises up 30 feet in the air? Yes, sometimes I wear that to answer the door. So I need a lot of space by that front door. No, I don't understand. So these things are large, but if you just went from the, I mainly live on the actual floor with my feet touching the floor. Now, if you floated through space, if you were a bird, this would be a spacious house, you understand? But as a human being, I think you're mainly walking around on the floor. So they seem bigger than they are on the outside. Does that make sense? Now, Doctor Who's TARDIS, that I cannot explain, other than it's a TV show, and so I think when they walk into the normal-sized police box, they didn't cut to a soundstage. I hope I'm not ruining anything. You just spoiled it for me. But, well, that's how they do it. That's how you get something bigger than on the inside, is that you have it be an actual different place. Well, this is an actual different place. You turned on this radio, and the last time that you entered it, the last time you entered this radio station, there was something different being played. You either heard music or a different kind of thing. But now, this time when you open the door, you look around, there doesn't seem to be any walls. There's no music. I'm not hearing music. The radio is supposed to play music. Or if there is talking, the radio is supposed to express an opinion.
Hello, I'm Hardy White. Kids today, have you noticed them? Here's my opinion. I think that certain hats are offensive to me because of the thickness of their brim. Not the thickness. What do you call that? The width of the brim or something like that? I don't know. How big a brimmed hat are you willing to wear? I wonder that. I know that I know pork pie is the smallest brim I'm likely to wear, but I don't know what the largest one would be. I sort of like those comically large cowboy hats that, like, maybe you'd see, like, Pee-wee wearing or something.
I wonder if it could get even bigger than that. I do wear a very large one when I'm doing yard work sometimes. I need something on my head that's pretty much the, what would be the diameter of a, gosh, what's a thing that's that big, like bigger than a manhole cover. What's bigger than that? Maybe that's not right. Probably about the size of a manhole cover, but made out of straw. Now, if manhole covers were made out of straw, how would that be? If they did make them out of straw, it would be layered really tightly and woven. I bet they'd be just as strong as steel if they made them out of straw. They'd have to be, right? And if they made hats out of steel, it would be a very light weave. It would be a wearable steel. I was thinking about getting maybe chainmail. Why? I don't know. I feel comfortable in it, just for around the house, not for battle. Just to keep me, I'm thinking it would help with my restless leg syndrome if my legs were so heavy that I couldn't move them. That way I couldn't say, I want my legs to be restless, but I'd really, I can't physically move them. And so that helps. I don't know. These are just ideas that I get. That's fine. I used to say, comedians used to say that, some observational, oh, it's just the way my mind works. I notice these things, and then I write them down and edit them, and I try them, and I workshop them until they're just perfect jokes. But that doesn't happen to me. I get ideas, and they tend to be nonsense, and I feel the need to pass them on, and beautiful, wonderful blank stares from people. I love that. I think that if I can get that, you know, I have a hard time getting a laugh. Sometimes I have a hard time making somebody think something profound, but I bet I can get them to sort of stare into space, you know? Like that feeling, say, oh, I'm sorry, I just kind of blanked out there for a minute. Boy, if I could achieve that, if I could get your mind to just sort of to wander to a place of no mind, I think that would accomplish something. There's meditation classes where you have to spend a lot of money and a lot of time to learn how to do that. And I'm absolutely positive that I could bore/confuse you into that state in a fraction of the time and money it would take. So why not join me? I think if you have made a commitment to listen this far, then you are serious about some things, about the realization that perhaps you are tethered a little tightly to your time, that maybe some of the concerns you have are not ultimately your concern, that you can, for a little while, let go. And I know that when you're in physical pain, there's no letting go. There's distraction for a bit. I know that. So I understand that everybody who gets in this time machine with me has a different state. They're in a different place. You might be sad. You might be happy. You might be pain-free. You might be in agony. And there's all those things in between. And so I account for them. I account for them. I understand that they are there. The drifting, the bath, it's good for all those things. So let's have a soak. Can you stop talking for a minute? The wind does not stop. The wind doesn't stop going through the trees. The thing is, the wind's not saying anything. The sound of the wind in the leaves is not conveying any specific information. And I too, am not conveying any specific information. I am the wind through the leaves. I am that sound. I am crows calling in the distance. Are the crows saying something? Oh, yes, to other crows. But to us, it's just sounds. Interesting ones, I hope, but merely sounds. That's what I want you to hear. The senses will never stop. You will feel things. You will continue to feel things in this time machine, even though you haven't been born yet. Oop, you're long dead. Oop. You will continue to think things. You will continue to hear if you can hear. You will continue, well, not to see. There's nothing to see, is there? That's the beauty of it, too. Your vision's not necessary. Your vision's not necessary at all. In fact, I imagine that if you have no hearing. I would love it if my show could be turned into just the vibrations. The vibrations. I could see somebody who does not have hearing to be able to touch something and just feel the vibration of my voice. I think that would be absolutely the same thing. I don't know if that would be really any different. At least my motivation isn't any different for that. That's what I want you to do. I've been told that sometimes my show causes you to fall asleep, that you'll be listening to it and you'll drift off. The sound of my voice will just become hypnotic, I've heard. It's not that I'm not listening, Hardy. It's just that it causes me to forget things or to let go, and I let go so much I drift off into sleep. Oh, you just made my day, if that's the case. I don't remember anything you said. Oh, now you're just flattering me. Because I don't want you to have to remember. You have to remember so many things. I don't want you to remember what I have to say. And I don't want you to be so attached to it, or I don't want you to think, oh, if that show ever goes off the air, it will. If Hardy ever drops dead, he will. That you're not going to get that thing. I'll never get the next episode. I'll never figure out how it ends. It never began. So it can't end. There was no story, so there's nothing to complete. It's just a feeling. We're just soaking in it. We're just taking in the air. I think I'm going to go get some fresh air. I say that all the time. And I step outside. And I breathe in. And I breathe out. Sometimes I forget to breathe out and I pass out. But then that's good, because then your automatic stuff takes over and you begin to breathe again. Thank goodness for that. Thank goodness for autopilot. I love to go on it a lot. So you're drifting. Are you dreaming? They call you dreamy when you're young and do that. I spent a time in school, you know, and I would sit there, and I was not the best student. I wasn't a very good student. I apologize to my teachers, because I don't think I was not interested. I wasn't, but don't think that. Don't think you did anything wrong. That's for sure, you did not. Bless you for being there. But I have a difficulty concentrating. I have a sort of attention problem where something only really has my attention for very short, brief bursts, and then it's like it never happened. So it's almost like having sort of amnesia where every day is new. You don't remember anything. And I don't know if it's neurological or it's by choice. I think some of it's by choice. I realized early on, there was a sort of futility trying to get a handle on things. And that sort of these moments were more precious to me. And that if I was living in the future, in the present, it generated some sort of anxiety. But not near as much as anxiety as when I was living in the past, in the present. Well, that would destroy me. And it still sneaks up on me. I was trying to take a nap earlier, and I literally thought of every single person I lost. Isn't that? Why torture yourself? Can't you think of them without thinking of their loss, Hardy?
Maybe. Why'd you introduce that thought into?
Listen, when I introduce something, it's just a bubble. So if you see something float by and Hardy says something, it's not going to be there in a minute, and you're not going to remember it anyway. That's the beauty of it. Oh, gosh, if a lot of things could be that way. They do that in fiction sometimes. They'll say, I'm going to save you by erasing the memory of this. It's like, oh, no, I want the memory. So, no, you don't. Do you? I don't know. I don't know if I want memories or not. It doesn't matter, because they're going to all go eventually, whether I want them or not. My want does not seem to be a factor in things in this life. My need does not even seem to be a factor in things in this life. I love to get in conversations about free will, because there's nothing
more wonderfully futile than that. Can you imagine just being a living human being and then having a long, passionate discussion about free will on top of that? Gosh, that is just the ridiculous cherry on the silly sundae. I like to do it. I like to do all these things that are futile and human. I love it. I love to swim and walk and run and breathe the air. It's when I put them in context that I get in trouble. It's when I stop soaking in the bath and start calling it a bath or start figuring it out, saying, I want a Japanese bathtub in my house. How am I going to do that? I think about things. I want to grab them. I want to put everything in amber. I want to take it. I want to recreate it. And I want to make it permanent. I see that with everything. That's what people who like to create do. Pardon me. I'm choking because time travel triggers my allergies. And I get that post-existence drip, I call it, down there. It's a good thing. I wonder, you see, I have always been frightened by the notion of heaven. Heaven to me is a place of agony and separation in my mind. I'm sure it's not. Who knows? If you've been there, correct me. But I see it as a sort of anchorite cell where, you know, you're separated and all you can do is peer through the squint at those you miss, all the things that you know best, all the people that you love most. And maybe there's other people in the cell, like your dead aunties, but that's where you want to be, you know? I don't want to be conscious that I'm missing something. I don't want to ever miss anything. That's why it's nice to be soaking in it. It's nice to be soaking in this pool of life. I have had nightmares, and I continue to have them. Where I'm plunged into a dark pool, I have nightmares that involve oceans and boats almost constantly. I guess because of my identification with Jonah. I've always strongly identified with Jonah. And I mentioned it the other day to somebody. I said, you know, I've been, when I was young, I was really called to be a religious person. I thought, I want to be up there in front of everybody. I want to be helping them out. I want to be showing. I've been so moved by this notion of love. I've been so moved by the notion that there is a warm embrace, that I belong in this world, that there's some power that that validates me, that says you are complete, that you are loved, that no human being or creature is capable of loving you more than this creative power. And that idea moved me. As a young one, I was like, this is it. I have been loved. I know what that is. I have seen the best of some people. I've been nurtured and cared for. I want to stand in front of people all my life and proclaim that. Oh, I want to do that. And so I was called like that to a religious life. But then all these things happened that disabused me of this idea. And I thought, oh, I cannot do this. I see things. I see things that I cannot abide. I cannot participate in this. I will not do this. And yet the call doesn't disappear, does it? And so, like Jonah, I was tossed overboard. We don't need you. If you're not going to say these things that we want you to say, along with those things that you feel, if you will not say the things that you know not to be true, then you will be cast overboard and you will be swallowed by a fish and you will live in the belly of that fish. And there I have lived for a long time, plagued by nightmares of deep oceans, of strange creatures who do not care for me, do not care for anything, that are dark and creepy and that drag you under to this blackness, away from love, away from people, away from acceptance. Oh, and that pulled on me my entire life.
I say, please, fish, vomit me up. If you vomit me up, I promise I'll proclaim something. Say, well, you know, this proclamation will you will appear foolish to everyone. I say, that's okay. I'll go do it. I can't live in that darkness anymore. I must spit me out into the light. I don't care if I'm in the desert, but I have to see the light and I have to see the others. And I no longer fear the rejection. I don't mind. I can look at them from a distance. And if I have proclaimed the truth that I feel, then I don't need the authority. Because for years, that lack of authority, that lack of having some sort of label or some sort of license to help people to be there at their times of joy, to help them through their times of joy and sadness. You got to get a license. You got to get a license. You got to get certificates. You got to get all sorts of things. And then you have to sign a bunch of things, a bunch of contracts that say you believe things that you don't. And then you are allowed to represent people's beliefs, feelings. Well, I can't do that. So I just am a wandering fool. And every once in a while, I'm going to spit something out that's accidentally true, only because I feel it deeply. Oh, and you know what? I think it comes from Aunt Helen's face. I think her look of horror from love and concern to know that what happens to me is that important to someone else? That was enough. I thought, my aunt, my elderly, simple aunt, and she was simple, no real education, no real profession, all right? Just love her work. Her life's work was that, and she did it imperfectly, okay? She did it imperfectly. But I thought, boy, that has affected me more than any preacher or rabbi or reverend or priest or anything that I've ever seen. Her face told me more than any gospel or Bible. And so, there it went. There went that direction. There went my lifeline. And at that instant, I gained a time machine. I got a time machine out of it. You know, it took years later, but I got a time machine. That's what this is. You think it's a radio show. It's not. It's a time machine, and you know it. If you've allowed yourself to really enter the show, if you'd allowed yourself to really travel with me, you know you've gone places. You know you've changed. And you know you can't prove it. You can't prove it. You can't prove that you and I have felt anything at all, that we've discovered anything at all, that we are anything but fools, that we are anything but simpletons. You will try to tell somebody about it, and it's going to come out all silly. And they may experience the same thing and think, gosh, that didn't work for me. You can walk in the woods and see nothing. Or you can walk in the woods and see paradise. It just depends. It depends how much you are unmoored, untied. How much you are free. Oh, I want you to be free with me. Do you feel sick? I hope you don't feel sick. Sometimes the time machine makes people feel sick. It can do that, you know. Listening. I know when I'm on the phone sometimes, I love to speak with my friends on the phone. Some of them I can't be with because they're so far away. If you live long enough, you make intimate friends, and then they all, sometimes they move to France or something, or they move to Vermont, or now if you're in Vermont, I guess that's, or France, that's probably good. But if you're in Kentucky or Florida or something, well, that's pretty far away. So you have to talk to them on the phone. And sometimes I'll hold the phone, even the modern phone, hold it up to my ear, and it the act of listening fatigues me physically before the act of connecting with my friend does. You know what I'm saying? So it's sometimes it's just hard to listen. So I understand that. I understand if it's hard to listen to this show or hard to listen to anything for very long. I know when you watch things, your eyes fatigue. Say, I've looked at that screen too long. I must close them. I have heard too much. I must close my ears. I have thought too much. But I can't close my mind. Well, I know that. I know that, and that's why I have this TV show, because you can't close your mind. I mean, if you couldn't close your eyes, what would be the equivalent? Turning off all the lights? What would be the equivalent? Having so much to see you can't even see it? What would be the equivalent of maybe I'm white noise. Maybe I'm a wind through the trees. But that's what I set out to do. I set out only to free you for a second, if I could. I think if I was clever, it would backfire. Because, A, I'm not. I'm not particularly. Sometimes I am inadvertently clever. That's happened to me. I've said something. I speak so much that I've accidentally said. I'm probably just parroting something I've heard. But I know that I've occasionally said something that could be mistaken for profound. And people have said it back to me. And I say, oh, thank you. I'm glad that resonated with you. But the reality is I really don't remember saying that. And if I did say it, that's wonderful. But gosh, I didn't mean to. I like to think maybe the show is like one of those magic eyes. Have you ever seen those? It looks just like colored static on the page. I used to have these in the funny page. And you'd look at it, and if you look at it and you sort of like focus just beyond it or just in front of it, an image pops out. Well, I've always said this show is sort of a magic eye, except there really isn't anything there. So if you do see something, you're just imagining it. But that's beautiful, because you can imagine something way better than I could ever possibly put there. I could make a ship pop out of it, but the ship that you imagine, the ship that you see by accident, will always be better. Always. What you see will always be the correct answer. You know, say, what's your message? Am I getting the right message? Sure. Just raw material. This is just raw material. This is just sounds. They're just to inspire you to go and make your own sounds. Just to have a soak. To forget. To learn how to forget and remember again. To learn how to become untied. To learn how to get into that logic and linear thought deprivation tank. To learn how to drift away. To learn how to step outside of time for a bit so that all these concerns, all these things that you think are true, all these burdensome ideas, you know, names for political things, or names for places, all these places have names. And think about how bizarre that is. You know, what is this place called? Because I'm walking. I think that when you're in another country, oh, this place belongs to someone else. Really, does it? That's strange. They're just kind of walking on it too. Yes, they call this place so-and-so. It is their place. Where's my place? I don't have one. You see, I was blessed too. Say, where are you from, Hardy? I'm from nowhere. Nowhere I've ever lived claims me or would claim me. I could go to every place I've ever lived, places I was born. I could go to the place I'd born and say, no, you're not really one of us. You don't belong here because blah, 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 and they'd be right. I could go to the place I live next and they'd say, no, you're not really one of us. You don't belong here because of blah, blah, blah. And I could go through that every single time and they would all say, no, you don't belong here because blah, blah, blah. Now, that hurt me for a long time, but then I realized, like, are you saying like a bird? Are you saying like a spirit? Are you saying I'm like a tree or a seed or something? Are you saying I'm a cloud? Because I think maybe, yeah, all right. That seems beautiful to me. So literally everywhere I go, I fit in because I'm a cloud. We're never out of place. We float in. You don't even see us. Sometimes you'll go, oh, that one looks like a big, fat, middle-aged man. Say, oh, well, yeah, hello. Or maybe something more interesting than that. Oh, look at that cloud. It looks like a pillow. Or look at that cloud. It looks like a pile of laundry. Look at that cloud over there. It looks like cotton balls. Or it looks like something like that. It looks like steam. You can use your imagination. They can look like a cotton candy. Or some other kind of cotton, or cotton, not the balls, but what's that sheet? They're like sheets of cotton. I don't know what they use it for. Did you ever see those? My grandmother used to get that. What's that for? Not sure. It looks like lint. That cloud looks like lint. Right out of the dryer. That's what I am. I'm lint. Oh, I like being lint. I like being. It just scraped me out of the filter. What are you going to do with me? Some of it blows out of that exhaust thing out of your dryer and just into the air. And you know what? You know who gets it? Birds. They get it. They put it in their nest. They use it. They go, oh, this lint. I'm going to go get some of that dryer lint because that stuff is good insulation for my nest. You get those. If you ever see these birds' nests, some of them you go, wow, that's luxurious. Look at that. It's like upholstery. And they go, yes, I've learned to upholster. They do that wattle thing. You know, they weave the nest. I was talking to a bird. I said, you ought to get some. You know what would be good? Is you get it, get some mud. If you did such a good weaving job with the sticks that if you were to mud that stuff up, you'd have like a pretty permanent little house there. And the bird said to me, I don't know, it is meant to be permanent. It's not meant to be permanent. I'm going to move on. I'm going to have my babies and we're going to go on, just make another nest. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. I think everything has to be permanent. And then I got to own it, and I got to have it, and it can't ever go anywhere because that's a sign that I have power. Permanence is power, right? You know? Sometimes I would get afraid. When I first started talking to people or doing any kind of art in public, I'd get afraid that my art was going to disappear. The first time I ever did radio, years ago, I did recordings, and someone stole them to be vindictive and destroyed all of my work. And then I turned to a friend who did sidewalk chalk art, Bill. And he said, dude. And I was like, thank you. Thank you for saying dude, because now I know what you're saying. You're saying that permanence is what's holding me back. It's what's keeping me from giving. I want it to be set. I want to have a book. Hey, where's one of your books? Here's my book with my name on it. Everybody buy my book. I'm going to go on my book tour and read my book. That never happens. I got nothing. All these years of making and talking. And where is it? Where's your work, Hardy? Well, I guess some of it's recorded digitally, but does that really exist? Most of it has floated out into space because I've been on broadcast radio that whole time. It went out into space. It's gone. If you bump into it on your way to Jubilius 7, Rises 7, Talos 4... In Star Trek, all those great Jewish references in those. Come in, Planet Talos, in that's some fringe humor. It's all drifted away. I don't have nothing to show for it. Thank goodness, because I believe. Just like the people that run our public park systems and forests, leave only footprints, take only colorful rocks. No, don't take the colorful rocks. Leave that there. Leave only footprints. Take only pictures. I guess you could take pictures, but why would you bother? Come on. Just look at the stuff. Soak it in. Go there again if you forget what it looked like. Don't take pictures. The pictures aren't it anyway. We take more and more and more pictures, I think, because we're afraid we're not going to experience things anymore. They're going to lose everything. You have to grab it. You have to grab it and make it permanent. You got to stick everything in amber because you feel like, oh, it's not good. I'm going to lose everything. A state of constant anxiety for loss, of failure. Let it go. You're with Hardy right now. There's no failure, loss. You don't have to do nothing. You don't have to impress me. You don't have to remember things you learned. You don't have to talk about movies. You don't have to do anything. You just have to sit. I don't even make you say anything. I hope that unburdens you. I think that social media, you put something, it is impossible. People can't restrain themselves from saying something. Even if they've got nothing to add, they've got to say something because they think they're required to. I must say, I got to say something, I guess, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of times they get in trouble. But here, you don't have to say anything. You just let it wash over. If you disagree, you agree. You don't even have to say. You don't even have to think it. You don't even have to think I agree or disagree with Hardy. It's complete freedom. You just have to let it blow through your trees. Just soak in it. And the water stays weirdly warm all the time. No, I'm not peeing or anything. We're not even in the same tub. Gosh, it's an individual thing. Now, I wouldn't mind being in the tub. I like the, where we're all sitting together soaking. That's nice, too. I'm probably just going to put a washcloth on my head and keep going, man, this is it. And then you go, this is it. Is this it? This is it. Man, this is it, isn't it? Oh. Are you blissed out? I'm blissed out. Are you blissed out? Woo. I could sit like this all day. I'm going to sit. Let's sit like this all day. If I didn't think I'd turn to a plum, oh, that reminds me. I'm going to get some of those salty sour plums that aren't really plums. They're actually a variety of apricot. Those are nice. I like them in rice balls. Think I might have one after my soak. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. I was thinking about looking at a leaf later. And then after that, I think I was going to stare. I was going to stare at some dirt. Because, you know, it's a little more complicated than you think it is. That's what I've been binging on looking at dirt. I've gone through so many episodes. I'll go to different places in the yard, look at it. But look at rocks a lot. I like rocks. And I like ones that are not special. That happened to me one time in Weeblos. Adults always sensed that there was. I was a kid who needed extra something. That I was a sad little boy or something. So they'd always try to why don't you bring in something that you are interested in? Because I wasn't good at anything. I wasn't a good athlete. I wasn't smart. I was just kind of weird. And so they would always try to find something so I could relate to the other children or to them or something. So I said, I like rocks. Say, bring in your rock collection. So they thought it was going to be like I'd have different rocks that I knew what they were and that that I had researched or something, or I was collecting different types of rock. So I just brought in some sort of random rocks that interest me. And I was like, this one, I like this one because it's kind of smooth. And that's pretty humiliating because all the other kids were like, that's limestone or something. And I was going, oh, is it? There was nothing that I could tell them about it. All I had was a love of it, appreciation. I was just interested in it. I wasn't an expert. And that crushed me for a while. I thought, man, I can't love something without knowing its name. I can't love a thing without naming it. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition
with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9, in New York City and Rockland County, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, all over the place I have friends. I love you. Thanks for joining me today, and I will see you again next week. Oh, I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I'm going to time machine's off now. The door opens. Bye-bye.
Blood! Harmoniers, Jesus goes. You want him to go where you need him to go. From the Fortune record label out of Detroit. If rock and roll began in the church, then can the church begin?